Business is simple. It's just not easy. We focus on three things to help you run and grow your business more easily: talent, sales, and how to scale. This is the Talent, Sales, and Scale Show.
Hey everyone, Brian Whittington with this episode of the Talent, Sales, and Scale Show. We have a pretty interesting topic here today. We're going to be talking to Brent Kettler. He's the president of Winalytics, and just recently he's put out a book called Revenue Acceleration Playbook, which is pretty darn interesting. So whether you're doing product-led growth, or if you're doing direct sales, or whatever the case may be, this is going to be a pretty interesting topic. We're going to be talking about how do we adjust based on the power shift from the seller having most of the power to the buyer having so much of that power. So how do we adjust no matter our approach, whether it's direct, product led, or whatever the growth path is? How do we do that? So with that said, welcome to the show, Brent.
Hey, Brian, thanks for having me.
Looking forward to the conversation. Yeah, I've been looking forward to this. So let's dive right into this. So one of the questions, and so you just released a book, but why should we listen to you about, one, that there's even a shift in the power base from seller to buyer having most of the power, to two, you being an expert on this topic, that we should check this out?
Yeah, so you started on exactly the right note. The people should listen because the vast majority of sales teams are underperforming because they haven't shifted to the new reality. And that's not my view. If you look at the data between 2009 and 2019, average seller on quota dropped from 57% to 42%. The average VP of sales tenure went from 36 months to 24 months as they bore the brunt of that declining performance. So we've got a huge decline in performance because teams have not made the shift to a new set of skills to confront the reality that buyers are in charge now.
Interesting. So I've heard stats like this, a little bit different stats than that. So talk to me a little bit more about that. What do you think the shift has been? Or I guess another way of asking that is, what have they missed?
Well, I think what they've missed is, so a lot of us, I mean, historically are trained to kind of master your product pitch, to competitively position your product, to know your close plan, right? So you go in, you need to control the sale, you need to control the conversation. We go in with that energy. Our buyers get bored really quickly because before you came in, they reviewed about 10 websites, right? Or peer review sites. They know all kinds of stuff about you. They're waiting for you to add some value to their life, for you to understand where are they today, what are they wrestling with, what problem, and how can you help them? I mean, Forrester came out with a study in 2014, so almost a decade ago, 8 years ago, saying 3/4 of buyers only wanted to engage with sales and marketing teams that knew about their business and their specific business issues. So the world of selling today is personalization. In every conversation, getting to that individual's business and business issues and showing you understand people like them through peer success stories, most of us are still in the mode of, I got to share more product information. I got to share all my product information. I'm just going to put it up there and hope something sticks, rather than asking good questions or guiding the buyer to build a bullseye for me.
So let's touch on that. You said personalization because there's a lot of back and forth on personalization. Is it personalization or is it relevance to show understanding?
So, I mean, what we teach is the whole purpose of discovery is to get to a buyer success statement, which is your buyer telling you how you can make them more successful. So let's take a very specific example. We talked about, we'll probably come back to it, Cagenity, which has a SQL analytics platform. You can now do SQL coding on your individual desktop, but then the entire enterprise can be on the same platform, sharing code, sharing data, et cetera. For them, you know, often they're going to get an individual user, but then to sell to a manager, it's basically, you know, hearing them say that, you know, right now my people can't reshare their best code, right? They can't reshare data So a lot of the data is different and disparate. If I had a platform like this, I could basically get my people to be 20, 30, 40% more productive because they're using the best code, they're sharing the data, they're repurposing. I would be a hero to my boss because now he believes in the insights that we're sending over. Okay. Right. So it's guiding them to understand what is that if we work together in 3, 6, 12 months, how would I make you a hero? How would you measure the success? That buyer success statement is personal to everybody you sell to.
Got it. So with the buyer success statement, how, with whom or with how many of those people, because you were talking that that's a product-led growth path that they're taking, right? So you have all of these users coming on board. So with whom are you developing that? And when then what's the pathway that you're suggesting to go upstream to the higher people that are going to have the influence and purse strings to be able to pull the trigger on this across the enterprise?
Yeah, it's an awesome question. And that's, we often think you start with a champion and that's in your first discovery call and you have to understand their success statement. But as we know from the, I think it's Gartner did this, you know, the average B2B deal has 6 to 10 buyers. So when you think about now going to your next conversation with a stakeholder group, a buying group, you got to get them aligned on that success statement. And honestly, just prioritizing what problems can we work on together? What's number one? What's number two? What's the number three priority? Where do we start working together? So you start with a champion who's your advocate, but they have to help you get other people to buy into that more successful future.
Well, and that was going to be my question, Brent, is, okay, so we're at the user level, right? So these are people that if we're a product-led group, they're buying this from a freemium model, and they might not be a champion. They might be a user. They might be a coach for us. I guess the question is, how are you then taking that user group, identifying a champion, and then taking this upstream to get that buyer's group, that overarching unity based upon that champion? Can you go down a little bit
more
deeply?
I mean, just think about it this way is how are you connecting technical value or product value to business value, right? So you have to solve a problem for a user. Often it will, with Cogenity, it's a process improvement or a workflow improvement. I mean, if you think about just about any software or even, many service offerings, you're solving a technical problem. But you, as the seller, you have to help connect that technical problem to a business problem. Is this about increasing revenue? Is it about reducing your budget spend? Is it about making a process more efficient? Is it about using staff more efficiently? In Cogenity's safe, Cogenity's case, staff could do more projects more quickly because they had become more efficient. So you're not going to reduce the number of staff, but you don't have to hire more as you take on more projects. So ultimately, when you think about going to that stakeholder group, yes, technical value to a user, business value that justifies a purchase.
Yeah, okay. So now, nothing new under the sun here. Hopefully, if you've been in sales for more than a couple of minutes, we've been saying this forever and a day. I mean, this has been around. If you look at Sandler, if you look at Spin, if you look at Miller Hyman, Challenger, right? All of these have been suggesting this for a while. People still don't do this, which just boggles my head. What you and I were talking about, Brent, I mean, that's why people are failing so often, because it's so easy to pitch, to just show up and do a product or features and benefits. You still see that right now. My thought is off of this. Okay, so we take that technical problem, tie it to a business problem. We all know that we should be doing that, but let's tie it to the topic that you wanted to hit on, is yep, the power shift from that seller to the buyer. So knowing that we should be doing this, we've been talking about this for decades and we're still not doing it. What's making you suggest that there's now a power shift that makes this even more critical?
Yeah, I mean, you hit on it, right? Is that I think most of our sales methodology and most of our training and this accelerated, by the way, in the 2010s. I mean, we had 7 methodologies in like 2011 before Challenger. We've got like 20 now, right? It total explosion. And every single one of them looks at the seller as the primary actor. And what we're saying is the buyer is the primary actor. And if you want to have good sales conversations or good customer conversations, you got to put your buyer first 3 times.
So let's hit that. So why, let me try to
it's,
get the
it's
right.
Not about what the seller does. It's about what the buyer says and does. And until you figure that out, your buyer is basically the one that drives the conversation.
Okay, so let me push against this a little bit and see if we're in alignment or disagreement here.
Yeah.
My sense is any one of those sales methodologies will still be fine if, and this is the big if, you leverage that with a customer focus, meaning that you're using those methodologies, questioning strategies to uncover that business case for that buyer and being an advocate for them to identify the real reason of why to do this business case, or conversely, why not to do it, because that's really my sense of what that value that the seller brings to the table these days. I don't know if that's in alignment with what you're suggesting or not.
Yeah, I think the unfortunate part of most sales methodologies is the buyer gets lost in the noise.
Can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, you take any kind of sales methodology, you take a Miller-Hyman blue and gold sheet, or you take Medic, right, and all their things, and like, there are maybe 3 things on a buyer in a sea of 80 different things. So in theory, yeah, you should be able to use it to be buyer-centric. In practice, what I've seen with sales teams is everybody reverts to a focus on what's the sales team doing? And we want to just... the skill shift, we want to think there's really 3 times in every single conversation, buyer or seller, where you got to put your buyer first.
Now, that's the second time you've hit that. Let's hit those 3 times.
Yeah. What the 3 are?
Please.
Well, everybody does discovery, but most discovery is shallow discovery. It's like polite, but nobody really uses it, right? We just ask a bunch of questions. We say discovery isn't done until you get to that success statement. So every seller should have in their repertoire questions to ask about their buyer's success statement. You know, what are you in, around this initiative we're talking about? What's a target improvement? What are you being measured against? Who's paying attention? Who set that goal? Is that a VP goal, a C-suite goal? Who would I make you a hero to? If we were to work together in 3, 6, 12 months, what would success look like to you? Until we have our buyer tell us where we can lead them to a more successful future, we really don't have a deal because there's not enough energy in the conversation.
Got it. So in our vernacular, we always call that vision the solution. So until we identify how we can in lockstep help them to become the person they want to be, achieve the goals that they want to achieve, we've really not done our discovery. Is that a good summary?
In their words, and we do a lot of coaching around follow-up emails. And when we start with a team, 90% of emails have no buyer vision solution statement, no success statement.
Okay.
It's basically, thanks for your time. Here's our product. I'll call you in 2 weeks. I mean, literally, start looking at follow-up email. There's no attempt to say why you were there or what you got out of it. It's a striking gap in seller skill sets.
Well, you know what? It's not terribly shocking because I've seen the ones that you're talking about, Brent, and I couldn't agree with you anymore. I mean, it's a shame because we talk about all these things, and I think this is really what you're pointing out, right? We've been talking about this thing, all of this stuff, but yet in practice, we're rarely doing it, or only the really good ones, successful ones are doing it.
That's right. So you got to get to a buyer success statement. If you're a sales manager, I don't ask them about the situation, who's in the deal, where did it come from? Ask them, what's your buyer success statement? If you don't know, go find out. Why are they talking to you? How are you going to make them more successful? If you don't know that, go find out. It is the single most, 70% of the deal is whether you have a buyer success statement, which to your point, can over time connect technical value to business value. So that's number one. Number two is the best sellers know their customer stories. Most sellers never use customer stories. And talk about your product only through customer stories. Because your buyers could care less about your product. What they want is evidence that your product has made somebody exactly like them more successful.
So whenever you're talking about seller story or customer stories, really it's peer results. Hey, a peer of yours found this results. Is that what you're talking about there?
Yeah. So take a company we work with called Activator Dealer Solutions. They sell to car dealerships. And they have a bunch of solutions, but one is an equity mining tool where they can see, okay, who's got equity in their car that we might approach about a trade-in. So often you'll see the newer people, they'll just go through and they'll talk through how we're going to mine your data. We're going to identify people. We're going to throw up these hand raiser leads. And it's just a blur. It sounds like blah, blah, blah to their customers. Cause there's a bunch of equity tools out there.
Right.
But if they tell the story, and you know, when Hanley Toyota was trying to increase the number of sales coming from their service drive, they only had a very manual way of doing that. And then when they started to work with us, the tool automatically identified people. When Mary would come in at 9 o'clock, you could see she had equity in her car. She was eligible for a trade-in. You could get a prompt to engage her. Now people understand your product in a way that is meaningful to them.
Nice. I want to come back to that one. Let's go to three. So number one was discovery is not done until we have the success statement. Number two is sellers know the customer stories. So these are peer stories of results of how that will improve their life.
Talk about your product through peer stories, not about your product.
Yep. Okay. So talk about your product through peer stories. And then what's the third one?
Yeah. So the third one is focus on what your buyer's actions are, not your own actions. Most sales teams, like, they progress their deals when they do a discovery call, right? When they do a demo and they send a proposal, and that information is irrelevant. What's relevant is, you got to ask for buyer or customer commitments. Will they help you prioritize, right? The things you could work on. Will they bring other people into the conversation, right? Will they tell you what the competitive landscape, do you have a good champion? So we always say, use the last 10 minutes to ask your buyer what they are interested in committing to. What do they think are the right next steps? What will they commit to doing next to deepen the partnership? So for us, it's like, know your buyer success statement, know your buyer peer stories, and know what your buyer is committed to in terms of next actions.
Yeah, because in reality, I mean, see if you agree or disagree with this. My mindset is all sales is really project management with extreme interpersonal communication skills, right? Because the seller has to do certain things. The buyer needs to do certain things. Each one needs to stay on task and complete their commitments within that time frame. And if either one fails at that, that's where the deals go sideways. We lose, we get elongated sales cycles, or lose a deal altogether to those who are doing a better project management workflow with that buyer focus in bringing value to that buyer. I don't know if that's in alignment with what you're suggesting.
Yeah, 100%. I would only say two things to what you said is that what your buyer does is actually about 10 times more important than what you do.
Correct, because what you do is really supporting your buyer to make sure that what that buyer does what the buyer is supposed to do actually gets done.
That's right. You're guiding them through their process. It's not about your proposal or your demo or your call. It's about guiding them through their process. And here's the second thing I'll say is that a lot of sellers that I see are not very good at asking for those buyer asks.
Yeah,
most calls end up as, hey, great call, I'll follow up in 2 weeks, right?
I love that one. So, and that's the challenge, right? So if you are a sales leader and your pipeline is slipping, which, oh, by the way, it's slipping right now because we're about to hit a recession if we're not already in one. Yep. If you don't have those next steps already buttoned up,
where you can go back to that buyer and say, hey, the last time we spoke, you said you were going to do X, Y, or Z. I'm guessing that wasn't done yet, right? Because you hadn't heard back from them. Then you're going to continue to get stalled and delayed, and you're going to be in this follow-up hell, and nothing is going to get closed. And then you're going to get back into discounting. And oh, by the way, whenever we're at 10% inflation or whatever we are right now, discounting is likely not the best path to success and long-term health of your business.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, one of the things we say strongly is you don't get off a call without your next call scheduled. And people say, well, that can seem kind of rude. It's rude only if you don't ask your buyer what they're going to do when they get off the call.
Yeah, and it's rude to waste their time by going into 5,000 follow-ups, becoming a... There's a huge difference, right? Or actually, there's only a couple letter difference between persist and pest. You take a couple of letters off and you move away from persist and quickly into a pest, buzzing around their voicemail and email, which they don't need another one. So wholly agree with that. Now, let's go to a little bit of definition here of how would you define buyer success statement? How would we know that we truly have a good buyer success statement?
Yeah, I mean, I always think of a good buyer success statement, just a couple of sentences saying, I heard you say you have this problem and this is what you're looking to improve. It's as simple as that.
Okay.
I think honestly, good discovery doesn't have to be highly technical. It's just, hey, here's what you're working on. What have you tried already? Where are you? What's your current state? What have you tried to improve? What's working and what's not working? It's as simple as that. You've got something, a goal you're trying to work on. You've got a gap to improving it, and it's just recapping that I understand you're trying to improve this and experiencing these challenges, and that's what's motivating the conversation.
Okay, so let me tie this into maybe a little bit of a tactical piece and see if I'm in alignment here. So I'm going to, Brent, let me, so you shared with me that you have problem, which is impact. What you're looking to improve is these impacts. You're going to measure it this way, and you were hoping that I was going to do X, Y, or Z. Is that correct? And that kind of sums everything up. Is that a good tactical way of making sure alignment that you do have a proper buyer statement?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, yes, I think you need to, as you practice it, we've seen teams, you get good at it's a couple of sentences and a follow-up email.
Right.
Right. You want to confirm it in a follow-up email. And then honestly, what the other huge gap, not only in the emails, but if you go to pitch decks, right? Which everybody calls it a pitch deck. I don't know why. I think it's an awful term.
It is.
We talk about stakeholder decks, but literally, I mean, your first or second slide should be, hey, this is what I heard in our champion call. Is that still true? Or is that true for everybody on the call? And to your point, a lot of people are lined up like, hey, this is why John or this is why Jenny thought we should all get together. This is what he or she shared in terms of what they're working on that they can't solve. Is everybody in agreement? Or are there other things we should be talking about? Or if multiple things came out of that first call, can you guys help prioritize? So before you get into your demo, reconfirming your buyer success statement, doing deeper discovery on your buyer success statement so you can target your demo becomes really important.
Yeah, and getting everybody's perspective. So we have what's called a relationship map, right? So it identifies who's all in the organization, their level of influence, decision-making power, their advocacy score to us, right? Do they like us? Do they dislike us? What's their role so we can align their role with their persona, if you will, with their perspective, their likely perspective. So do you have any tools or tactics to help people through this? Or is that part of what's in the revenue acceleration playbook?
Yeah, I mean, you identified one, which is an influence map.
Right.
A second is just thinking about, a simple worksheet on the buyer success statement. Right, which is outlines what you said. This is the problem they're working on. This is the gap they have. This is a targeted improvement. If you think about working through that, you need a buyer success statement. You need your influence map for, to people to agree to that success statement. And then the last thing, we talk about a path to partnership or a mutual close plan. Some people talk about it as a sequence of events.
Okay.
Right, is you have to have, and one of the things the mistakes people make in a closed plan is it's an internal document, but you actually have to externalize it to your buyer.
Oh, interesting. So taking that internal document that you're going to put on that pathway, because if this is truly a mutual collaborative event where it's project management to help them to achieve the success that they're looking for, then it's a mutual shared document. Hey, here's our action items. Here are your action items. This is the due date. We'll come back and confirm all this stuff is done. Is the kind of what you're suggesting?
Exactly. I mean, we will put it on a one-page slide in a deck, right? Is these are the steps. And some people I've worked with, some leaders will call it a work back plan, right? It's like, okay, is this is when we, it's a way of qualifying timeline. Is this when you want to start? Yeah, that's when I want to start. And then you work back to, okay, well, these are the things that need to happen, right? We built the initial success statement. We're building the business case. We got to get all the stakeholders aligned. If we do that, then there's a technical proof of concept. I'm just making these up. Then legal procurement, right? And ideally, that mutual close plan, you're not sequentially taking those steps. You're parallel taking those steps so you close faster.
Yeah, precisely. And you keep that all on board. So we also have, in our vernacular, we call that a timeline technique. So if you're looking for that timeline technique, we have that on YouTube, but then also definitely check out that revenue acceleration playbook from Brent and his team. Now, we do these things, we get these three times where we're really focusing on the buyer, that discovery statement with the buyer success statement, where telling the talking about your product stories through peer stories, and then we're getting the buyer's next steps through that sheet that you just named. And what was that name again, Brett?
Well, we talk about it as a people that have different names, mutual close plan.
Okay, and then you have a mutual close plan where you're both in line about that. Now, how would you suggest these for those who haven't done this yet, that haven't created these peer stories, how would you suggest they start to develop those?
Yeah, no, it's a great question, because sometimes marketing doesn't have the capacity or they're not clued in. What we say is tribal knowledge, right? If you're a senior person, you probably do carry those around. I mean, all senior sellers, like, you use your best clients to go as references for your next clients. If you're a more junior person, we say, you know, ask your senior people, what are their best stories, and hear them and write them down and kind of own them a little bit. So I think you can, sales teams can often, just by sharing stories, their own stories, hearing them, recording them, you can kind of build that repertoire a little bit. And if you don't have your stories, we always say, go ask your customers.
Yeah.
Right. Even your long-term customers, just ask them, you know, what are they most excited about working with you? Like, where are they getting the most out of the relationship? You can set up a call to do that, because in a call, you can do two other things. You can say, and is there anything that's not working for you? Right. Create that opportunity. But even more importantly, you can say, and is there anybody in your network? Do you have any peers that might enjoy a similar benefit? We use that motion of getting customer stories to build referral introductions, which close by far at the highest rate.
100%. Okay, so great takeaways there. Now, is there a particular size, you know, average contract value that you should be leveraging this? I mean, what's the ideal business case for using this type of methodology?
Yeah, it's a great point. I mean, I think, you know, probably under 5K, right? It is a little bit more product led. It's a little bit more feature and benefit. You don't have to build a coalition of support, right? That buying group. And there is a price point, you know, when you start to get into high six figures, where it's more of an enterprise, you need to build the business case, but we know that they're the relationship mapping and aligning to corporate initiatives. It's basically like, hey, are we aligned to a top three initiative for the year? where I think in a lot of those big enterprise deals, the mechanics of getting to a buyer success statement is like you get to the best buyer success statement. It's not a corporate initiative for this year, so it really doesn't matter.
Right. So on that one, you'd want to look at their 10K. Is it called 10Ks or their K1s? Not K1s, goodness gracious, that's what we get in their taxes, right? So we're looking at their 10Ks or their annual reviews for their risk statements to find out alignment. My sense is, though, maybe you don't go into that persona mapping, or not persona mapping, that relationship mapping, like you said, if you're at an SMB size. However, the rest of this stuff really still aligns, because even if you only have, say, 2 to 3, maybe 4 buyers within that buyers group, everything that we talked about is absolutely relevant. You might just not have to do the mapping with everyone else and getting everyone else involved. You just have to do that with 2 to 3 people, and you can streamline this a little bit, but there's nothing in here that I wouldn't suggest for every type of sales methodology or every type of sales approach. I don't know if you would agree with that or not, Brent.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I think the relationship mapping always helps, like understand, you know, who are the power and influencers. I think the biggest skill deficiency or the biggest opportunity for pop or oomph is what you said about, hey, just that verbal recap of, hey, I understand you're working on this problem, you have this goal, you're having this challenge, you see us as being a partner in solving that. I mean, honestly, just focusing all of your conversation at the beginning and coming back to that at the end, like, I want to spend 10 minutes confirming that I understand where you see the most value, and then what that would guide us to do next. So I think the thing that, whether you're talking to a champion or an advocate, or whether you're talking to a stakeholder group, just being really intentionally about what's your why? Why are you here? What problem could I solve for you? Coming back to that over and over and over again, that's where you're going to build the most deal velocity.
What's your sense of why that impacts so much, or why that is so important?
Because people are busy and overwhelmed. And if you don't get to a meaningful success statement, a meaningful impact, something that they remember, they're going to forget about you right after the call.
Let me throw this out at you and see if you would agree or disagree with it. My sense of why that's so powerful is because that shows understanding,
yep,
of their current situation. And if you're able to show that understanding, then that instantly builds the trust. And that's what they're looking for, to be able to trust you, because they know that you understand. And if they trust you and know that you understand, they're more apt to allow you to help them down the path to helping them solve this situation. That's my take. I don't know if that's in line with
absolutely. You're, by recapping, you're showing, hey, I'm listening to you. Back to personalization, right? You're personalizing for each person. I'm listening to you. I'm not just selling the same product and pitching you the same product. I'm listening to you. I understand where you are today, what you're trying to solve for. I think all those are really important. I just would emphasize this. I don't think it's enough to understand. I think you have to build excitement about a better future.
Agreed. And, you know, that's a really good point. I'm glad that you brought that up, Brent. Something that I did early in my career is I looked at, you know, only focusing on the problem and unpacking the problem and getting them to look at the problem, which in reality, all we did was made them feel badly.
Yeah.
But if you can get them to admit, hey, let's look at this. Is this truly a problem, right? It's you and me looking at this problem, and that's an alignment. And then going to, I think what you're talking about is this buyer success statement. That's the vision of the solution. That's what the to-be state is. That's what utopia is going to look like. Now they have hope and excitement of, yeah, we can do this. Yeah, and together, that's where it's a both and. We need both of those to get them along that path. That's kind of the way I'm taking this. I'm not sure if I'm right or not.
No, 100% captured. And what I would encourage everybody that's listening, and whether you're a manager, whether you're frontline, whether you're an executive, honestly, we just say, come up with a couple of questions around your buyer, that paint a more successful future for your buyer.
Yeah.
You know, so I riff some, I'm going to say them again, like, you know, around that initiative, have you set specific goals? What would make you a hero to your boss? What would get you to do the touchdown dance, and who would you be doing the touchdown dance with? If we were to work together in 12 months, how would you know we were successful?
Yeah.
If I were to wave a magic wand and, two things could change, what would you want those to change? So it's what you said, but so just very specific, get your own questions and own them, but always get your buyer excited, not about just their problem, their pain chain, which makes us feel bad, to what's that better future that I'm excited about talking with you about again, that I might start thinking together that we have a shared future and working towards that. Now I'm excited. Now I feel like I want to talk to you more. Now I feel like, wow, that was a great conversation.
Yeah, exactly. And so it's, what's success look like? How do you measure it? What are the biggest challenges preventing those measurements today? And would these things help in that? Maybe four other questions that you could add to that. So love those. All right. Well, let's kind of tweak this a little bit. And knowing this and people wanting to start to implement this stuff, Brent, what are maybe the one, two things that are the biggest challenges, or what, whenever you've seen companies trying to start to do this, what's the biggest challenge or biggest mistakes that they tend to make that you would help our people to avoid?
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge, honestly, is just not once people start using these questions and they see the level of energy and the shift in the conversation, as you said, it's like once you start asking these questions, your buyers say, oh, they care about me. They're trying to understand. They're interested in a more successful future. So I think the biggest challenges are just kind of in our mind. No, really, I just need to tell them about my product. Or no, really, we're the greatest thing since sliced bread, and I just need to tell them that again. Or it's fear-based, right? As people will say, well, I already know my product pitch. So if I pitch my product, I know exactly what's going to happen in the meeting. Whereas if I start asking questions, I don't know where they're going to go. And so I think it's a mindset shift that, hey, if you make it about your buyer and your buyer's more successful future, honestly, you will close more deals quicker and you will enjoy your work. And you just have to make a couple of simple adjustments to come back to your buyer's why.
Yeah.
Your buyer's why, your buyer's peers, your buyer's actions. Make it about your buyer and not about yourself.
And the curious thing is, you can do this, anything that you want to say, figure out how to ask that in a question. So yep. It's no longer what you're telling them. It's what you're asking them. Because if it's an NO, when would you like to know that? When would you like to KNOW that? If it's a no, I want to know as quickly as possible so I can move on. And by the way, if it's a no and you know it, but they don't yet, reveal that to them, disqualify them. And they're going to become your biggest advocate because they've never had a salesperson, or rarely have had a salesperson, be that open and honest with you. And they're now going to be the biggest evangelist for you. And you're going to get all kinds of introductions from them. So, I mean, absolutely do what Brent's telling you here.
Yeah. Two things to pick up on. I love the expression, telling is not selling.
Yeah.
Right. Our brains are wired. And there's a great book called The Transparency Sale by Todd Capone.
Yeah, great guy.
Yeah, where he reviews his research that our brains are wired to resist being told. So to your point, if you just say it as a question and you guide the buyer to the same thing, now you've got their buy-in. So telling is not selling, flip it into a question. The second thing is the reason to do this is you will instantly differentiate yourself from 80 to 90% of sellers out there. Right. And you will build more trust and more credibility, be a trusted advisor, have better conversations with people, and you'll make more money quicker.
Do you think it's that bad? 80 to 90% are not doing this?
We rarely show up, and we work with teams at all stages of growth and all stages of success, rarely show up where there are many people that are doing really good discovery. They all say they are. But most of them have very superficial questions that aren't really getting to, it's a prelude to a product pitch. So yeah, maybe it's not that bad. I would just say that, we've had a decade, right? I mean, Todd's book kicked off, there were one of your questions interviews was kind of like resources.
Right.
I mean, Todd's book kicked off like that transparency sale, I think it was 2018. You know, then there was a book by a marketing guy. I'm actually going to just pull up the name. Marcus Sheridan, that says they ask you answer. Andy Paul's coming out with a book called Sell Without Selling Out. I have a colleague, Carol Mahoney, called Buyers First. So it really was in 2018 that this set of resources started to come together about putting our buyers first. And as you say, it's like none of this stuff is revolutionary, but we have been trained to lead with our product, lead with positioning, control the sale, build your close band. We have been trained for a decade to be in charge.
Yeah.
And we're no longer in charge. So most people have been trained the wrong way. So there's a huge opportunity to make simple adjustments, to make it clear to your buyer that you're anchored on them and their success, differentiate yourself, be more successful, make more money, enjoy your conversations a lot more because you don't have conflict with your buyer. It's about finding fit.
Absolutely. So I just saw Carol's putting some early release stuff out on her new book. And then Todd Capone, if you want to check him out, he's on episode 36. So you can go in the Wayback Machine there. And he has a new book dropping in July. So likely whenever this is coming out, called the Transparency Sales Manager. So definitely grab his stuff with the Revenue Acceleration Playbook with Brent. Couldn't agree with you anymore on all of this stuff. So love it, love it, love it. All right. So how about, and I think that you started hitting on it a little bit, but what are maybe some suggestions that you would look for in hiring this type of salesperson or transforming this type of salesperson, whether it's around talent or how to sell this way or scaling a business where all is doing this way? Why don't you pick one thing of the best suggestions that you might have of bringing this together?
Yeah, I think the for hiring, and you can also do this in training people. Honestly, I think building a testing for a learner mindset or a curiosity mindset, just like I would encourage everybody to develop a consistent set of three or four behavioral questions when you interview people that could sound something like, hey, when was the last time you got in conflict with a peer and how did you resolve it? Or you had a buyer that signed the contract and then said they didn't want the product. What did you do about it? Or more importantly, you know, when was the last time you got some feedback, some developmental feedback from a peer or a boss? What was it and what did you do about it?
Yeah.
Right. So what I think we need to test for is this idea that that people have some kind of situational fluency is a word that we recognize that in the current environment, the answer comes out of the conversation. You can't know the answer going in. And a lot of salespeople are wired to know the answer going in.
But it's kind of funny. One of the ways that we test for this, so wholly agree with you. If you're not doing behavioral interviews already, get that in your arsenal. Get the scorecard to help bring objectivity to this hiring process, especially whenever you're talking about sales, because even bad salespeople look great on paper and interview well. And one thing here, you can suggest this one here, Brent, is I always say, hey, listen, you're out, adult beverage of choice with your best friend. They share with you that they're going to do something that you believe is the worst idea ever. They're going to just destroy their life if they do this. All right, I'm your best friend. I just dropped this on you. Talk me out of it. Go. And however they respond to that tells me what type of person they are. Are they a features and benefits? Tell me. Or are they a questioning, asking, seek first to understand? It's so curious to see how people do that.
Yeah. Love that.
So got it. All right. Well, how about resources that you might recommend? I know that you laid out a couple, but what books, podcasts, guides that might you recommend?
Yeah. I mean, I think those are the books I would encourage people to sort of, you know, just sort of immerse themselves in this buyer first world. I think one of the things, the marketing book podcast is one I would recommend to people in sales. One of the things we are pushing on a lot is, if you're thinking about sales is just as a standalone, you're thinking about the wrong thing, because in the current environment, sales has to be part of the whole buyer journey. So we have to be proactively aligned with our marketing teams, right? To figure out that the value messages that are being put in the market on our website, by our prospectors, by our sales team, by our customer success team, are all the same. One of the things we believe really strongly is you got to start with these value plays that cut across go-to-market teams that capture business value. So would encourage anybody in a sales role, if you don't have those, start a dialogue about them.
You're right, because to have a good buyer's experience, that buyer's journey cuts across every segment of the organization, that go-to-market strategy. And for the most part, everybody's profit comes from the renewal. And if you're not selling this properly, the customer success team is going to have a bugger of a time, and they're not going to see that success rate. Therefore, you're not going to see the profitability, that continued growth, because you can't outsell the churn. You're not going to get new funding. You're not going to see that exit strategy. They're all aligned. And my goodness, when are we going to finally get this, that we have to come together? I mean, it used to be just sales and marketing that fought, and that was, you know, we talked about that forever, but now it's everybody. So yeah. It's really curious. Now, that's kind of your main focus on what your organization does, is making sure that you have alignment between all of those go-to-market players. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, we spend, sales is often the main focus, but then the alignment to the marketing, the prospecting, and the customer success. And what we see is this idea of customer stories, right? It's a unifier across all of those teams, because the way we talk about our product often, or the level of depth we go into our product, is different, but our customer stories, like a good success story from customer success, works just as well for a prospecting team as a sales team as on your website. So we do a lot of work on building tribal knowledge on stories, not just in your sales team, but then cross your go-to-market team.
Yeah. And it helps in so many different ways, because if you're onboarding new salespeople or new people, them knowing that tribal knowledge, those stories, they can remember that a lot more easily. They can better understand those stories rather than, you know, features and benefits and statistics. They'll understand the story and they'll feel more part of that culture already. And it really shortens down cycle time or onboarding and time to effectiveness. So wholly agree with that.
Yeah. And building on that, a lot of people say, oh, well, that, you know, that content, that's for marketing, right? And marketing develops the stories. And we see a trend that we're now pushing and taking our own clients onto it. I think of ETU, it's a Dublin-based company that does immersive reality training, and another company called Scratchpad, which is a Salesforce plugin, totally different industries, but in both cases, they don't onboard people into their product. They onboard people into their customer stories.
Oh, interesting.
Because what they want is this, you know, kind of like, I want you to understand what we do through the lens of our customers. So I think good sales teams are recognizing that the value is in what you said, is if I know why somebody will renew and buy more, that's what I want to sell forward. I want to capture my customer success in a story, sell that forward. It's actually a great way, customer stories, of keeping the whole organization lined up on ideal buyers.
And if you think about it, engagement's been a huge issue for how long? And if I know the impact that my customer is having because of what we're doing, I'm going to be more engaged, more apt to sell this. I have more of a belief, that confidence that comes across in everything that we do. It just makes everything better. It's the funny thing is, right, Brent? It's just a small little tweak that makes such a massive difference. But I think you touched on it a little bit earlier. It's a mind shift. It's a mindset shift.
Yep. And I want to emphasize that, because people say, oh, this seems so, you know, oh, put buyer first or whatever. I know my product. And really, we're talking about a couple of small tweaks.
Yeah.
Which is that you introduce your product through good questions, which help the buyer get to their own conclusion about what they don't have currently and how they could be more successful. And then you're going to share your product, but rather than doing the product pitch, which to your buyer, by the way, sounds like
Charlie Brown.
Charlie Brown's teacher, right? That's what it sounds like. Tell them a story like I did with Activator, and they're going to be there. Tell them a story about a peer and they're going to pay attention.
Yeah. Well, hey, what do you see coming down the pike? What's the future hold that you're really excited about? New trends, or maybe some things that you're a little bit worried about from these, what the future is going to bring us?
Yeah, I mean, I think the future is going to bring us even just more and more of a focus on buyer personalization. And I think teams just, I mean, we need to get better at that. It's going to change the skill set of sellers and sales teams, right? I mean,
off of that, how much do you feel as though this shift in this move to remote, you know, post-pandemic, post-2020, if you can call it post-pandemic these days, so post-2020, and with the change in demographics of the age group of the work population, how much do you think this is going to accelerate this or amplify the requirement of this?
I mean, I think it's sort of it's becoming a 0-1. If you're in a commodity industry, okay, maybe it's not an issue, but if you're in any other industry, you need to start building these skills or you're going to underperform or you're going to go out of business. And we do work with a couple of companies in industrial automation. One is called New England Controls here in the Northeast. Another is called the Seam Group down in Texas. I mean, they sell like equipment, you know, they sell pumps and valves and filters and, you know, radio wave detection kind of stuff. And their whole focus now is really around their sellers being to sell into business outcomes because they live in a really competitive ecosystem. And so if their sellers can't tell a story about how that pump helps you with predictive maintenance, you're not going to get any mind share. And so your competitors are going to eat your lunch, right? Over time, the person that is the trusted advisor wins the business, that understands their specific business issues, speaks to it, is going to win the business more and more.
Yeah, it's really difficult to create value off of gallons per minute whenever maybe that extra gallon per minute doesn't matter, right? Good enough is good enough, or some feature that you love, but that your buyer is never going to use, right? You might have fallen in love with it, but that brings no value to your buyer. If you're doing those features and benefits, you're dead. So no matter the product, a service, or you know, a SaaS product, if you're not creating these business case, the business case, and helping them to win the business goals that they have, you're going to be in real trouble. So couldn't agree with you anymore there, Brent. We'll love it. Well, hey, listen, we're winding down here. Who should reach out to you, Brent? How should they do it? And why should people reach out to you?
Yeah. So, you know, we work directly with mostly sales and go-to-market leadership, but have a bunch of, you know, really strong sellers, sales team members in my network. So people can come to our either book website, www.authenticitywins.com. They can get a sample of the book, figure out whether they want to buy it, figure out whether it's interesting, or they can connect with me on LinkedIn is a great thing. And I will answer anybody who sends me a message. They can also email me at bkeltner@winalytics.com. And the reason they want to reach out is because we're going to help them figure out how to go from the wah, 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 which is what all products sound like, to really engaging your buyers around a success statement that gets people to lean in, makes your job a lot more, you'll make you a lot more successful and make your work a lot more rewarding.
Got it. Love it. All right. So summing this up, let's get our buyer success statements up and rolling. Don't just look at it. Buy the bloody book, would you? Revenue Acceleration Playbook. It's well worth it. Get it. And then let's make sure that we focus on our buyers at least three times. How about the whole entire time, but at least in these three specific cases. Discovery. Remember, discovery is not done until we have that success statement. Two, let's use peer stories to feature your product offering. And then three, let's make sure that we get your buyer's action steps in that alignment. Brent has a couple of tools that we talked about, so reach out to those. Really appreciate it, Brent. Thanks so much. Any parting thoughts before we close it out?
No, just thanks for a great conversation, Brian.
I really appreciate it. So remember, knowledge for knowledge's sake is pointless. Let's do knowledge for application's sake. Pick one thing that you're going to take and apply today. Hey, share this, like it, comment it, give us a five-star review if you've enjoyed this. That really helps us a lot. So can't thank you all for your time here. And let's get after it. Let's help communities thrive through entrepreneurship. See you.